Prepaid services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 188. Baubles, baubles, dross and baubles. I'm Adam, and here's Robert Haynes.
Actually, that's repulsive. What is it?
It's Rhys Parton. Why is he gone all quiet?
Rhys?
He must have stepped away.
Or he's accidentally muted his microphone. He did answer, didn't he? Oh, well, I came out. Here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Well, I just put 1.79372 and 2.204628 together.
And what does that make?
Yeah. Four!
Mary Lang.
Standing around all day looking tough must be very wearing on the nerves.
Matthew Kressel? He's not there. Oh, he is!
Excuse me, are you sure this planet's meant to be here?
And Rhys Parton again. Is that basically what his little phrase is? Just complete silence. Who didn't say anything? Some of their Menti ads were a bit quiet, weren't they? That's probably what. Hang on. Yeah, he just sent me a message. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. You've got your either the microphone.
Well, he doesn't know what's going on.
The trouble is, when he's sort of there but not there, it's like he isn't there and we can sort of talk about him, but he can actually hear us and it's going to be a bit strange. Meanwhile.
Has he tried turning it off and back on, mate?
I see.
Yes, I did, and that worked.
Yeah, oh, he's there now. And Rhys Parton. Well,
by the left frontal lobe of the sky demon. I have had it with my
There
microphone.
Were so many captain quotes,
yes,
weren't there?
Good. I was wondering, yes. I was surprised none of us had taken any of those.
Why did you, donut? Baubles, baubles, dross and baubles.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, well, I was expecting one of the by the horns of the prophet.
I know, but like I say, there were so many of them, I could have just picked any of them.
Yes.
So, one of some of the best dialogue in the history of the show. But anyway, I've already said how much I like this. Right, moving on. I suppose we better get on with it. Pirate Planet, everybody, this week. I'll be very disappointed if nobody likes this.
Who said that?
Who said that?
Who said they don't like it?
No, I said I would be disappointed if nobody liked it. And didn't say anybody didn't like it.
Master?
Yes.
Master?
Yes.
Are any of us first-time viewers of this
Me?
One?
I don't know. Me?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. This will be great.
It will be great indeed. Yeah. Anyway, it begins. This is they've just got the first key of the key to time.
Moons of madness.
And the only thing you can say is that the model of the sort of city or town near
bridge.
The bridge is a bit naff, but the model sort of town looks hang on, but it looks a bit like the or it reminded me of Logopolis a little bit.
Yes, it did.
Yes, it did a lot. Like a child's diorama project for school.
Yeah. And also the uniform of the captain's crew reminded me a little bit of the Star Wars crew as well.
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah.
Ironically, because it was all around the same time. Well, there you go.
Yep.
Mr. Fibberly, what a character.
Brilliant.
And of course the captain. So, but straightly we get into the episode and we've got two fantastic characters to kick us off with before we even get to the Doctor and Romana. And of course, then we have what was the name of that weirdo character that turned into a Mentiad?
Praelix.
No points there, but yes, it was Praelix.
He sounded like a chocolate. I have a Praelix, thank you.
It sounds like you're eating one as well. Be quiet. Reef. So he starts going a bit weird, doesn't he? Because he's a bit psychic and. Then the Doctor, meanwhile, is sort of fiddling around with the TARDIS, and he's got his next destination. But when he tries to materialise... Now, I was watching this bit because he whacks his face on the TARDIS console because he already has the
dog bite.
But before he whacks his face, either they got really brilliant makeup or he hasn't actually got the scar there. So I'm a bit confused.
No.
He has.
By the time they filmed... the scenes in the TARDIS, it had mostly healed. And so when you see the scar in the TARDIS, it's a makeup made Scar. Yeah, because it is not the real Scar.
Because all the filming was done pre to this.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, well, what really caused it, since I did not have access to infotext or anything?
When they were doing the Reboss operation, Tom Baker and a couple of his co-stars went down to the pub, and one of them had a dog, and the dog had a trick about if you hold the sausage, the dog would jump up and bite it. And Tom Baker did that thing where you put a finger in your mouth and you make a popping noise, and the dog thought it was a sausage, jumped up, and bit his lip.
Oh.
And he had to go to the emergency room, or the British equivalent to the emergency room anyways. Yeah.
Which is sort of the emergency room. No, I'm only joking.
Casualty, yes. I couldn't think of what the British phrase was.
Oh, that'll do. It's the same sort of thing. Anyway, back to the episode. I noticed, I like the Doctor's jacket that he's wearing before he puts his scarf on. It's a sort of dark, sort of burgundy, browny sort of velvet thing.
I did too, and I liked his neck piece too.
Yes,
I found it
amusing when he puts the first segment of The Key to Time in the refrigerator. He sticks it in a boot.
Yes,
that'll keep it safe.
Yeah.
So anyway, they've materialized eventually, and he's sort of, they're having a bit of an argument because Romana says that the space-time coordinates are what they should be, and the Doctor's looking out and, oh no, they're not, and they have a bit of an argument as to who's the best at getting the TARDIS to land where it should land. I must admit, obviously having seen this loads of times, completely understand what's going on, but at the time it was a really good mystery when I first watched this as to why this is why it's going to be interesting to get the views of Rhys and Mary. You know, why she's waving around the tracer and it's going off all over the place. So how long did it take you, Mary, Reese and Mary, to work out what was going on? Mary, Reese,
yeah, with the tracer?
No, what actually had happened in regards to the pirate planet and what had happened to the planet within, stuff like that.
Califrax and...
Probably most of the story probably wasn't until episode 3 that it... You know, when he talked about it, that it occurred to me what was going on.
What about you, Reese?
When they started making a really big point of it, the tracer detecting it all over the place, I thought, well, does that mean, like, the buildings are built out of it or something like that? But then when I found out the planet could move, I kind of had a good idea what was going on, that would move around another planet.
Yeah,
yeah, but they didn't explain about the planet moving around until episode 3.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty good, because that's basically what it was like when I watched it as a 11, 12-year-old when it went out. Mm-hmm. So, but it's even though you know what's happening, or personally I know what's happening and completely understand it because I watched it loads of times, this is one I can watch over and over and over again without getting bored. I would have liked to have watched it with the infotext, but I didn't have time. But yes, Robert.
I'm just looking through your schedule, and you got 193, The Five Doctors, and you've got 198, The Five Doctors.
I thought I changed that. There was a new
one.
You
did. Look at the version of the schedule that's pinned on the Facebook group.
Okay, cool.
All the way at the top.
Anyway, so the Doctor and Romana wander around.
And that had nothing whatsoever to do with the pirate planet.
No, wander around the town square, and some jelly babies come into play. They do find some sort of random jewels on the floor and some gravel, which I thought was quite funny that you mentioned about.
I didn't notice the gravel until the most recent time I watched it for some reason, even though I've seen this probably 10 times.
Well, the Doctor says gravel as he's swimming.
I know. But I guess I had been laughing at something else and missed it.
I mean, it's the same. I was
sitting here last night with Fred. Rewatching it, even though we had watched it 2 weeks ago, and we both chuckled at that one.
Well, it's because obviously, when you, for me personally, looking up for questions on a quiz, you tend to try and look at things in a more detailed way, and it is really good for me because I'm picking up on things that I'm really watching the episodes properly. Even though I'm not writing a review, I'm taking more in, and I'm enjoying them more now. Which is ironic. So I'm wondering whether I'm actually going to like Twin Dilemma when we actually get around to doing it.
You mean details like the fact that the city's population is all of about seven people?
Yeah, but also, have you noticed a bit where, what's the name of the...
Ah, but they're all very, very rich.
That dark, the dark-haired gentleman. The dark-haired.
Maybe it's just the 1%. Maybe it's just the 1% of the city's population.
Right. We meet the Prelix's sort of family, don't we? I'm going to say the dark-haired gentleman, whose name eludes me. He leans against the sort of... And I do like the sort of circular door sort of ways, you know, the sort of... He leans against it. You can clearly hear the sound of polystyrene creaking under his... Yeah. So he takes his hand off quickly. Which was quite
funny. Only that, when he came in, they said, quick, close the curtains, and they were see-through curtains.
Made no sense.
This particular story has one of the greatest number of wobbly sets ever.
I've never noticed
it. Doesn't bother me one iota.
I've never noticed it before, but before watching it this time round. But again, it doesn't matter. Other thing that came to me was the grandfather character. What a horrible sort of shallow man he is. I didn't like him at all.
Well, I think he's a comment on older people who have learned to live with the system and not question it because it means survival.
Yeah, but he said, I would cheerfully strangle Prelix for the sake of the captain or whatever. I can't remember what he said, but it's just what an attitude.
I think it's Douglas Adams parroting sort of the characters you see in, if you look back at sort of 50s British films. I'm also thinking of Quatermass 2 as well. The sort of the characters in authority or the people in the village who are always like, oh, trust the authorities. Authorities know what they're doing. If they say do this, that's why you do that.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But that's typically what older people do, too. That's how they learn to survive.
Yeah. And now we meet the Mentiads, now Rhys and Mary. What did you make of the Mentiads initially?
Mary. Well, I thought they were pretty threatening. I thought they were the demons in this until, of course, it comes. I mean, I pretty much discovered it as the story was telling me about these things.
What about you, Rhys?
Yeah, me too. I thought they were... I don't know. There was something about them that felt a little bit silly, but also I like the whole telepathic nature of them too.
Of course, I'm talking about the telepathic thing, like later on in the story, the way it's explained that they're gaining this telepathic energy from. And it reminded me slightly of an instance in Star Trek. I can't remember if it was the Next Generation or whether it was the original series, where a whole planet dies and Spock feels the pain of the whole planet.
That was also in Star Wars.
That's Star
was
Wars.
It? Yeah. I'm pretty sure Spock did it in one of the Star Trek stories. Anyway,
Obi-Wan.
Obi too.
The first movie.
Yeah, and Counselor Troy being an empath was always feeling, the emotions of other planets and people.
Air cars are a bit lame, I have to say. Just little speedboats.
As one in Rings of Akaten.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. Yeah. That obviously was a homage to it, wasn't it? That's got to be said.
Rhys, your recording levels or your microphone levels pretty high. We're getting some distortion.
Yeah, it's a little bit distorted, yes. But it's only Rhys.
Mr.
Yeah, the Mentiads go in search, I think, of the Doctor. No, Prelix, that's right, and then attack the Doctor.
Yeah,
And it looks like they're killing him at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I love that. I love that where they give him the look.
Yeah.
I've gotten the look from teenage daughters so many times.
I get that from the missus. You won't be surprised to hear. But of course, he's only made unconscious. It's not a lasting thing. So that's a relief, wasn't it, everybody?
Good vibrations.
It's a cliffhanger.
Pardon?
I said good vibrations.
Yeah. Yes. They both say it at the same time again.
Yeah. So, of course, the sweets on the bonnet of the air car trick was used a few times. Not all these.
Only
always
twice.
I think it was three times actually. But
no, it was twice.
When did he use the grenade type thing?
Taking
the pin out.
and did you notice that he pulls a jelly baby out and it's just full of licorice all sorts instead?
Yeah, because obviously he wanted the jelly baby. Didn't they use up all the jelly babies on the first person they met there? Do you remember? And
yeah,
the guard came up and said, "Where'd you get those from?" So So, yeah.
From my pocket.
Oh, that No, that's what Romana said, from your pocket, not from...
Yes, yeah. Yes.
It made me curious, because if they're so rich and happy, supposedly, why are sweets such a suspicious thing?
Well, they look a bit like gemstones in a way, don't they? Sort of that sort of sweet.
Baby. Also, they'd never seen jelly babies before. I mean, what did you think the first time you saw a jelly baby?
Precisely,
Mary. I mean, I wouldn't treat it like it was some forbidden substance, which is the way they were treating it.
No, never mind.
You mind if you lived in a totalitarian regime?
Never mind. Anyway, they arrive at the entrance to...
A 20 megabyte podcast.
the bridge, I think it is.
Adam, don't take this the wrong way, but when I was watching this and watching the caption, I was sitting there going, "It's like, I wonder if that's how, like, Adam is when he, when we're doing."
Oh, you made me press stop. Anyway, they arrive at the thing, and the doctor's trying to get in using a sonic screwdriver, a hair grip, and a few other bits and bottoms. It's just quite funny when he turns his back.
They arrive in a disused railroad tunnel.
Yeah, thank you for that, but Kirby.
It's in Wales.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that.
They went to Wales a lot. That really surprised me when we started doing these, how I would think they would have done a lot of stuff around London, but they head over to Wales.
Yeah, now they film it in Wales. They disappear into London a few times, don't they? They've turned it around.
Yeah, they got the hint and just moved there, yes.
So Romana's sort of in having a chat with the captain. I do love that blooming that corridor with the, you know, the what looks like a conveyor belt thing. It's a bit like those airport corridors, isn't it? But it's sort of a bit sort of closed in. But I do love that concept, and it's a fantastic concept, and it does lead to one of the best gags in the story. Yes, Robert.
I was just going to ask again. You've got 201 and 201 as Castrovalva, then 201 the Time Warrior.
Well, just obviously, the other one would be 202. Back to this episode. Good grief!
Oh, with when the doctor's going down that corridor the first time, it was the first time I noticed. I even noticed this when I first saw it. It was the first direct quote, or nearly direct quote, from Hitchhikers.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
I'll never be cruel to an electron and a particle accelerator again, versus I'll never be cruel to a gin and tonic again.
Well, it's quite handy to have on the show somebody who's a bit of an expert on Hitchhikers to pick up on these things.
I hope that you have listened to and watched Hitchhikers.
Well, you can hope on. I've watched Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when it was originally broadcast, but I haven't actually watched it properly since, I'm afraid.
You must!
I do seem to remember, though, it was repeated when I first went out with my beautiful wife in 1989. It was repeated on BBC One, and she came round to my house and said she wanted to watch it. But I think we got a bit distracted, so I didn't end up watching it in the end.
Oh, no, distracted.
Is it me, or somebody made Reese go very quiet now?
Probably.
That's Kirby's fault.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it right. Is this okay?
Better.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
That'll work good.
No, much better.
Sounds like John Smith now.
So, anyway, thank you for that. The Doctor arrives at the captain's lair, and then he sort of blags a sort of... He says that he has to go back to his TARDIS, but he needs two Time Lords to get into it so he can take Romana with him. And they take some guards, the captain insists they take guards with them, and this is where he uses a little gag with the conveyor belt, I think. No, they all get to the end of the conveyor belt, don't they? I call it a conveyor belt because that's what it looks like.
Yeah.
That's later on.
That's when and the dark head guy shoots the guards.
That's right. And then doesn't Romana pick up a gun and shoot someone dead?
That's later on. I think that's in episode 4.
What was it? So they end up.
And these guards have the worst. They need target practice.
They are terrible shots.
Yeah, shots in the world. Yeah,
they are very, very bad. But
unit troops.
They go in the mine shaft, which reminds me a little bit of the Green Death. Probably was filmed in a similar.
Wait,
sort of...
What? You completely missed the whole engine room.
Yeah, you talked over that, but it was only them in the engine room and the doctor talking about technical stuff.
There's some interesting things about the engine room.
Oh,
Berkeley Power Station, which has been decommissioned by now, but it's only about 5 miles away from the power station that was used in Sarah Jane's last story.
Kirby, you did say that was interesting. Anyway, moving on.
And they all had to, they had to make sure that they were not radioactive as they were leaving. Also, when we see the, you notice that we see the captain and Mr. Fibulae off in the distance, which is rather unusual in television to show someone in a far shot like that having a conversation. The reason for that is that they had not completed his bionic arm.
Prosthetics, yeah.
And so that is a mock-up. And they didn't want to show it they didn't want to show it too closely.
The technology.
Okay, thank you for that.
And then the close-ups, they refilmed segments for the close-ups later.
Brilliant. Okay, right, so they end up in the caves, like I said.
That's interesting.
If you say so. And they end up in the caves, and they're being approached by these guys.
How many no idea.
Get your Welsh. Get your Welsh working.
Not even the Welsh.
And yet they did. They did a different word for the first Ronnie story.
Oh, I'll put that on my list.
So yeah, basically the caves are the gap between
the National Show Caves of Wales.
This is where he gets some more examples of terrible shooting by the guards. I'm trying to work out what the cliffhanger is here, actually. They meet the Mentiads, and Romana goes, "Ah!" And they've basically been looking for the doctor. But in fact, they're just put up this rather interesting sort of force field. I quite like the dampened sound effect they used for the guns to make it sound like they're just bouncing off this force field that was up.
Now, have you noticed that when we see these terrible shots, the terrible effects for the
lasers,
the weapons, at least put enough thought through that when it misses, it's a circle, and when it hits, it's a diamond.
Oh, good.
Mm. Okay.
Didn't notice that one.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
I did.
So basically, this is where we find out that the Mentiads are goodies. Goodies. Actually, talking about goodies, so Tim Brooke Taylor is coming to Cowes later on this month. He's in conversation with somebody. But he's coming to Trinity Theatre in Cowes, so I don't know whether
I haven't the foggiest what it is.
Go and see him, Adam.
Well, Google Tim Brooke Taylor, Google Bill Oddie, and Google Graham Garden, the goodies. There's loads of that on YouTube. Goodies. Anyway, moving on.
I haven't heard Matthew in a while. Is he still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
He's saving it all up. He's just enthralled by the being part of the podcast and being like a listener within it.
Every time I get ready to mention something, somebody else mentions it before I can.
I'm sorry about that.
Kirby?
You need to learn how to say master.
Mm. I'm feeling superfluous to requirements this morning.
No, you're fine. You're definitely not superfluous to any requirements. Hang on, is Basil like Brush in there?
Boom, boom.
Boom,
sorry. That was good.
Anyway. So there's some of the, an example of the captain's insults that he come up with. Let's see if one come up on me subtitles so I can... By the flaming moons of hell, they shall die! That sort of thing, which was highly entertaining.
I collected about two thirds of them. Horns of the prophet Balak speak. No, by the sky demon I say no.
No, no.
By
no.
the beard of the sky demon, the
jaw. Okay,
thank you.
Okay, Kirby. Gabby.
Pardon me.
excuse you.
Now, what the Queen's aunt here, what was she initially before we realised she was a projection of the Queen?
She was the Queen.
Yeah, before that, what? Was she like the nurse or something? Because that's the impression I got. Yeah. She was just the nurse.
Supposed to be a nurse. Yeah. That's her title on there.
There you go then. Thank you very much. She was quite good, actually. A good performance from her.
Yes.
Subtle. Mm.
Yes.
She looks quite good nowadays as well.
Does she? Are you saying she didn't look good then? Well, she's a bit flat-chested, I suppose.
Well, she looks better now, actually.
Well, she looked pretty dreadful on that couch.
Did she?
Dying away.
Did she?
Yes.
Now, this concept
that was not the same actress.
Thank you for that. Well done, Kirby.
You know something interesting about the old lady version is that she was asked if she could take her teeth out, and she said, no, I won't, but if you give me a bit of extra money, I will.
Yeah.
Because it made her look in a bad light.
I've just spilt tea on the iPad. That's your fault.
Kirby.
Oh, no. Not in the room.
Right. Where do we get up to?
Oh, by the way, David Warwick, who played Kimus.
Yeah.
Kimus.
He was later in... Army of Ghosts as a police commissioner.
Thank you for that. Moving back. I do like the concept, you know, when the captain walks the doctor around his little collection of planets. We come up to probably one of my favourite Tom Baker bits ever. And I'm now going to, because it's come up on the thing, I want this on the episode, so I'm going to have to turn me volume up. You probably won't hear this, or maybe I can let you hear it. Hang on. I can use some wiggly.
The concept is simply staggering. Pointless, but staggering.
I'm gratified that you appreciate it.
Appreciate it? Appreciate it? But you commit mass destruction and murder on a scale that's almost inconceivable, and you ask me to appreciate it? Just because you happen to have made a brilliantly conceived toy out of the mummified remains of planets?
Terrible storms, Doctor! It is not a toy!
What's it for? What are you doing? What could possibly be worth all this?
By the raging fury of the Sky Demon, you ask too many questions. You have seen, you have admired. Be satisfied and ask no more.
Captain, sir, come quickly.
Yes, as I say, that I had to play that bit because brilliant.
It's brilliant.
From Mr. Baker.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it is.
Adam, you could have said something. I've got that scene on an audio CD. The BBC released that scene as part of the... on an audio CD as part of the Douglas Adams at the BBC collection.
But I wanted to play it.
Yeah, let him play it.
I'm just saying.
It's my toys.
It's all right.
You're not toys.
Right, anyway, I tell you. Once again,
feeling superfluous.
Oh, be quiet. There's lots of scarf action.
Won't be superfluous when you win the quiz.
Yeah, be quiet. There's lots of scarf action. Now, the scarf action in this story reminded me that my scarf has got lots of tatty bits on. I might have mentioned this in the past, actually. So I got, I sent an email to Lavarsi, who are the manufacturers of said scarf, and said that, you know, I'll show them a picture. And I got a lovely load of emails back from some, I think a lady was called Marinda or something like that. And she said that if I send them the Amazon code of the original transaction, they can send me a new one for free.
Ooh.
But unfortunately, I bought it through Forbidden Planet. And of course, they don't own Forbidden Planet. It's one of the rare things that Amazon don't own. They don't own Forbidden Planet. But they did say that I can have a replacement for £20. Bearing in mind the scarf is £50, I thought that was a really good deal.
Ouch. Well, no wonder I haven't bought one.
But you see, she said I could either have that or have a refund off one of the other products, like the Sixth Doctor's jumper or the new Series 19, is it? The 19 scarf? The burgundy one?
First off, Seventh Doctor's jumper, and it's the Season 18 scarf.
Excuse me, did I say Sixth Doctor's jumper? Just to make sure you're listening.
You did say Sixth Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
See, Matthew, you're needed.
And then you said Season 19 scarf.
Just testing.
Yes.
I've got to give you something. I've got to give you something to say in the episode. As I was saying, then we have the cliffhanger to episode 3, where we think the Doctor's walked the plank to his death, which was a great cliffhanger. Literally.
Yeah.
Well, more of a plank.
Yeah, I remember being startled by that one when I saw this, when I was actually watching daily.
But you know what I thought? Well, you probably don't, because I'm just about to tell you.
What did you think?
Well, you know when he jumps off and you hear him go,
ah!
They could have dubbed that, on to Logopolis, where he refused to do the, ah! They could actually dub that one
off.
Yes.
But they didn't, so. No, I'm just thinking, where he refused to do it in the Logopolis, but he did it in that. I know it was like a projection, but anyway, you're going to say, Robert, sorry.
I was going to ask, what did people think happened to the Doctor?
I thought.
You know, how did they think this was?
I don't know, but certainly he could have jumped down and hung on to something.
I thought he hung up with his scarf. That's what I did.
Yeah, I suppose he could have done that.
I remember when I watched this for the first time in 2007, I was sitting there going, how are they going to fix that?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Which I think is the whole point of a cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah, or a plank hanger.
Very effective thing, I
well,
think.
Well, duh.
And of course, there we have...
it has actually...
Now,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it was
the cliffhanger
before...
has...
that was my Zippy laugh. And Zippy, of course, is topical because he was played by Roy forgotten Skelton. His name.
Roy Skelton.
Thank you. Don't get any points for that. But yes. Oh yes, Jeffrey Bungle.
Please continue. I'll wait.
Well, no, carry on. You might as well now.
You missed the great scene. The fight between Polly and K-9 occurred before that cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, you were talking over that.
Oh, yes.
Space Evatron.
Yeah, that was a good, fairly good battle, despite the rather bland special effects. But it was still, it was quite good. Polly
can
itself
I have a confession?
No. I'll go on then.
Oh, okay.
Go on then.
When I originally watched this when I was about 9 years old, I had lots of Lego, and I built myself a K-9 out of cardboard and that. And I built a Lego bird, and I had reenacted that battle, so it had an effect on me.
Aww. Yeah.
Good, that's right. Anyway, Queen Xanthia slaps the Doctor. Must have hurt, because he did recoil quite strongly.
She went for it, too.
But they could have used that, for the cut lip, really. But carry on.
Tom Baker and the actress who... played the nurse, whatever.
Should have had that as a question.
They worked that out. That was not in the script. They worked that out as a joke dealing with the cut lip.
Oh,
even more.
Okay.
The actress was Rosalind Lloyd, who was
you might come up with that.
Okay. Yeah, was the daughter of. Was the daughter of British film producer Ewan Lloyd, who did films such as The Wild Geese with Richard Burton and Roger Moore.
Do you know what, Matthew? I reckon you're the new Kirby, because before you joined the show, and I'm very, very glad you did, but despite what you try and make out, before you joined the show, Kirby used to be the one who used to look stuff up very quickly on Wikipedia and come up with all these facts. But now he spits back and said, I don't know. Well, I don't know.
I just gave you all the location stuff.
Grief.
Yeah, you're our tour guide now, aren't you?
Yes.
All right, now it all got past me. What is it that the actress playing the nurse and Tom Baker worked out? What is it?
The slap.
The slapping where she slaps him and he holds his hand up to his cut lip.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right.
Right, which brings me to another one of my favourite bits of the episode. Here we go. See if you remember this bit. I hope it plays properly on my speaker, which is playing. I have to get a new speaker. This is terrible. Here we go.
Conservation of momentum is a very important law in physics, don't you?
Yes.
I don't think anyone should tamper with it, do you?
No,
not at all. Newton's revenge.
Yes.
I love that.
And that's the wobbliest set of all the wobbly sets.
Yeah, but it's just so fantastic.
Yes.
Well, that's people flying at it, didn't it?
Oh, it always makes me laugh out loud. That it's just so fun. Right.
I like the scene that follows when they're like, yes, destroy the whole psychic whatever. And Fibberly's like, how do you know that the guards are going to know that? And Captain just presses the button. Destroy everything.
Yeah.
Well, I like the scene immediately after we have the cut scene back to the bridge, and then Romana and the Doctor are talking about Newton, and the Doctor says, "Drop an apple on his head." Ah, and so he discovered gravity. No, he told me Clara three.
Anyway, meanwhile, the captain is deciding that they're going to materialize around Terra. So the Doctor and Romana quickly, and K-9 for that matter. No, K-9.
That's a firma decision too.
Yeah.
So they have to materialize in the same place to stop the captain from destroying Earth, and nearly blow up the TARDIS at the same time. But that's not quite the end of the episode. I thought the bit where they use, you know, the spanner and they use a sort of superimposed sort of picture was a bit naff. But I don't, like I say, yeah, it doesn't
particularly
matter.
Since if you look over to the right hand side of those CSO segments, you can see little dots from whatever's holding the spanner up.
Yeah.
That move around with it.
Yeah. But it's just the fact that it's just the fact that it's video on top of film. It just looks a bit odd.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
I read someplace that for the one of the DVDs, my DVD is the, huh?
No, saying Wikipedia.
No, someplace else. It may have been on the TARDIS Wikia, perhaps. I don't know. I didn't save it.
Same thing.
Anyway, my DVDs for the Key to Time are the original ones, which are. Don't have a lot of extras and stuff, but I don't know if this is the copy or if it's the newer one where the restoration team redoes the spanner to make it look better.
Oh, since
this is the only in my
this is the only one I've seen. I don't know.
Ooh, yes, Jiffy Buggy. Stop talking over each other. I'll deduct points. Anyway, Kirby had he was actually talking when Robert talked over him. So I'm thinking Robert probably points deducted there.
He's adding points.
Yeah, but he was interrupting.
I was trying to say to Kirby that I think he got it right because on the 2007 edition I've got, it looks corrected.
Point reinstated. Point reinstated. Yes. Go on then. Have you finished, Kirby?
Yes, Master.
Oh, good, right. So basically, the Doctor and Romana save the day, but unfortunately, the Captain dies as a result, as does Fibberly. And it's quite nice that when Fibberly's...
Well, now the Captain is killed by Xantia.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Everybody dies at the end of the story. But it's quite nice when Fibberly's dead, and after the Captain going on about killing, threatening Fibberly with death earlier on in this story, actually showed a little sort of... compassion towards him, which I thought was quite good. So yeah, and of course, yeah, it was just right. Okay, that's basically the end of the story. They sort of use a sort of special term of cleverness to work out that they're going to
any chance of cleverness
turn Hanyaflat into a key because they're going to pick it up in the TARDIS later or something like that. I don't know. Right.
But is it hold on, Adam?
Yeah.
Didn't the Stones of Blood come after this?
Yes.
It probably did.
So we just watched that, you know, at the start of that, them coming in having picked up the key then.
I know. But
right. Yeah, but we don't see the key in this episode.
No.
We see it in the next one.
Yeah. But
story.
Yeah. But
story, not
thank
episode.
You. It does rather reiterate my point that you don't have to watch these in order. You can do it, probably best to, but you can pick up these, and like I say, it is part of an arc, a clear arc, but you can just dip in and out.
Arc in space.
Oh, God.
You beat me to it.
Right.
Infinity, you mean.
No.
Right, I'm going to have to say, right, I know some people don't like comedy in Doctor Who, do they? But there's a lot of comedy in this, but this, it works so well in this story. This, for me, is perfect Doctor Who. Absolutely.
Balance. Yes. Absolutely.
One of the two best stories ever.
The other big city of death, correct. Is what you say.
Correct.
By the same author.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So all I can tell you is...
Which is see, Adam?
Douglas Adams Master? Gets Doctor Who. Or used to, anyway, when he was
Master?
Still alive. Yes?
Master? That's why I've heard for years now that these are two of your favorite stories.
Yeah.
That's why I'm a little bit surprised that you're not more of a Hitchhiker's fan.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't like Hitchhikers, right? It's just I'd never, ever have time to watch stuff. I'd barely have time to watch these episodes when it's out. But when I do get some free time...
Big Brother...
And
the X Factor, Big... and The Voice.
If you let me...
Yeah, and various matches
speak,
of whatever is silly.
Yes.
If you let me speak... Big Brother is something we watch as a family together during meals. We don't watch... Because nobody else in the house really likes Doctor Who. I'm not allowed to watch Doctor Who with everybody else. It's something I have to watch on my own.
And we're talking about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Well, I just explained about 5 seconds ago that I've hardly got time to watch Doctor Who because I don't get a lot of time to watch stuff on my own. When I'm watching TV generally, it's because I'm not allowed to. How many times do I have to say? Nobody wants to watch.
It's not the Doctor Who.
They won't watch it.
How do you know?
Have you tried?
Because they won't. Oh, well, yes, okay. Try. Well, we'll try that one. Then I'll ask them on the audio.
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Do you want to watch Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? Deb will say, no, we've got to watch X Factor. We've got to watch.
Yes, please, Adam.
I'm being a very naughty boy.
Right, moving on. It's brilliant. There's nothing wrong with it. There's just really nothing wrong with this story at all. It's or Douglas Adams as a Doctor Who writer, and it's such a shame we didn't get more of him. He did. Anyway, where do we get up to? Right, I'm going to go for Reese and Mary next because they hadn't seen it before they watched it this time around. And the first person I can see on screen is Mary. So, Mary, what do you think?
Well, I have a very mixed reaction to it, actually.
What?
Oh!
I didn't know until episode one, you know, started. As soon as I saw written by Douglas Adams, I thought, oh boy, here you go. All the little fanboys of Douglas Adams are going to uncritically love this whole thing. But I guess I'm not that big of a comedy sci-fi person, so I don't look at much at Red Dwarf because that's constant comedy. And it just doesn't appeal to me. I guess I'm like Deb, you know, where Adam's concerned. It's like, I don't want to sit and watch this stuff. But anyway, about this episode, the first thing that struck me was the terrible village, which, like I said, looks like a child's diorama project. And the only other episode that I could think of that was worse than this was Legopolis, which even up close looked like a big papier-mâché set. That was horrible. This gets close behind that. And then I wondered why, you know, the shots that were supposed to be like the city were always that same little area and had only about 7 people in it who were very fakely going, yay, yay.
They were originally going to film that on location, but they had a little money issue.
Mm. Okay. Surprise, surprise.
And then I found the captain so annoying through the entire episode. It's like he was in another story. Everybody else was in this story, and then he was in a different one. He belonged like in Red Dwarf. And it wasn't until episode 4 that they then explain why the captain is so over the top. So then they, oh, okay, now I get it. But then, you know, all this time I've been annoyed with him. let me see here. What else?
Ooh, have
did
you
I
got notes?
Say? Oh, and then, yeah, I did. I jotted down things that, you know, that I wanted to comment on.
Impressive.
I was kind of annoyed that the soldiers, the guards, were such bad shots. They couldn't hit anything. And yet everybody that shot back at them that is not a trained shot was able to hit them dead on. Yes.
Like Bellatone or whatever his name was.
You know why, Mary?
What?
They hired ex-actors from Star Wars.
Yes.
Well, David Prowse was in Doctor Who before he was in Star Wars.
Even in the mines, which should have been, you know, an easy place to hit anybody, they were even worse there.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know, overall, I mean, episode 4 explained so many things and made a lot of things that I did not like make more sense. So then I kind of liked it, but I guess I just don't have that little comedy gene you guys have that that enjoy stuff like that. So I appreciated it. It was well written. I enjoyed the doc. I think that's it. I like the doctor to be the comedy figure. I like him to be serious when he needs to be serious and funny when he can be funny. And this captain was like all over the place, kind of outdoing him in the comedy. And that just didn't sit right with me.
Thank you. So, Reese?
Yeah, but other than that, I thought it was well written.
Well, I thought the captain was actually quite dangerous, just probably because having a shouting man, you know, in the screen shouting at you is always going to be dangerous. I don't know. I quite like the captain. And unlike Mary, it was the humor that brought this story to life for me. Every now and again, I'd be writing down one line that made me laugh, and another one would come up, and I'd have to forget that one to write the new one. So I didn't get all my favorite funny lines because it was just so – it was so Douglas Adams from what I know of him, which is the first two Hitchhiker's books, which I've read, and I think maybe another story by him that I've watched. But just little things like eventually when they were talking about the rocks, K-9 was obviously saying, affirmative, affirmative, and then he said something Master. To which the doctor went, affirmative. And so basically the doctor nearly said affirmative because of something that K-9 said, and I thought it was just a clever way to twist it. And it was humor like that that I really liked. Like, I think she's going to be good. Very, very, very good, Master. And things like that. And I just, I don't know, the dialogue was sparkling and quick, and it was a lot of fun. But the thing that did get on my nerves a little bit was a lot of big words describing what's going on with the machinery. And I just thought it could have been a little bit more simple, like saying, well, this planet swallows other planets and that's what happens. Don't explain how it happens, because I did start taking notes of some of the scientific-y processes that happened, but then, you know, I eventually just gave up doing that. So if any of the questions are about how the planets are eaten and shrunk down or whatever, I wouldn't know how to answer them exactly. But I thought it was a great, fun story, and I thought, like you mentioned, Adam, Tom Baker, while he can be funny, has that really serious moment, and I thought it was fantastic in that. And Mr. Fibulee was also very good. And I can see why it's one of your favorites. I really do like it.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Matthew.
This would have been the fifth story I saw in 2007 out of the local public library. And though I was aware of Douglas Adams and I was aware of Hitchhiker's Guide, I hadn't read any of the books. I hadn't seen the TV show. I hadn't heard the radio show. I hadn't even seen the movie, which was out at that point. So this was my first exposure to Douglas Adams.
Well, at least you acknowledge the radio show. A lot of people forget that the radio show even existed, and it was the first thing.
Oh, yeah. Which is, I'm always surprised people forget that. But anyways, and I absolutely love this story. And as I said, I came to it fresh. I came to it not knowing anything about Douglas Adams other than he was this guy who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide. And it's an absolutely brilliant script. And there's some really good performances in there. I love Bruce Purchase as the captain. He's over the top, and he actually rarely, for particularly this era of Tom Baker, where he was being kind of over the top and was dominating, here's somebody else who can stand up to Tom Baker and can draw your attention just as easily. That being said, I do see where Mary is coming from in terms of the production values. In fact, Graham McDonald, who was the head of the department at the – sorry – at the BBC at the time, actually tried to can the story and keep it from being made because he thought it was – I am sitting.
I'm talking to magic.
Yeah, so am I.
I know. I was attempting to invoke some comedy.
Oh.
Anyways.
We don't need comedy.
Well, we did. We are doing a Douglas Adams story. We probably got comedy enough. And Graham McDonald, the head of the –
Get on with it.
Graham McDonald, the head of department at the time, actually tried to keep the story from being made because he thought it was too ambitious. And I think that the story probably was a bit too ambitious for what could be achieved in the BBC studios in 1978. Or rather, I think had it been put in the hands of a different director, Pennant Roberts, as we know from his later stories such as Warriors of the Deep and Time Lash, was not the best director the old series ever had. So I think that the Pirate Planet is a rare case of substance succeeding over style.
Okay.
Because certainly production-wise, it's not a brilliant story, but script-wise and in some of the performances, it's absolutely brilliant.
Yes. Excellent. Thank you very much. Kirby.
Ah, brilliant. Brilliant. One of my favorite. I'm right with you, Adam. It's, I believe, my second favorite story. Douglas Adams is just wonderful. Three or one of my favorite possessions. I've got the Hitchhiker's Trilogy autographed by Douglas Adams. I would say I met him at a convention.
Excellent.
And there's not much more I can say. I'm surprised. I guess Mary's reaction explains why on the Mighty 200 list of stories, Pirate Planet is right smack dab in the middle. It's number 109.
All right, okay.
There's not much I can say. It's just I saw this when I was watching it in university in the student center, trying to jockey for position so I
can. No, it's shocking, isn't it, Robert?
So jockey for position so that I could get the TV room to watch these things at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever it was, and hope no one else came and turned on a soap opera or something. And so it was great because I was able to see them as single episodes one day at a time, which really made things like the startling scene of the doctor jumping off the plank. It had an impact, more of an impact than...
What, when the doctor hit the ground, you mean?
Right. Oh, by the way, when I was watching this with Fred, she was very, very startled at the walking the plank business too.
Mm. Okay, thank you for that.
We started watching Spearhead last night too. Okay,
thank you. We'll do that another time.
Spearhead.
Shut up, Robert.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I absolutely love it. And funny kid be bringing up that plank scene. Even having watched it before, I could not remember how that resolved itself. So it was like I was watching it for the first time, which I thought was good. But I have to disagree. I quite like Penn Roberts as a director. I know he was one of Louise Jameson's favourite directors. But I reckon he's quite good, and I quite enjoyed his direction, and I quite like the special effects, apart from some of the laser firing. I thought was pretty sad, and even that polyphase Avatron, the beam that he sort of emitted, that yellow kind of thing, looked quite crap. But apart from that, yeah, I quite enjoyed it, and the special effects I thought were quite good. And
for 1978, they were fine.
That's why I have no problem with them.
For a BBC budget.
Yeah. I thought they were fine. So, yeah. Very good. Very enjoyable and breeze through it.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you very much. I'm a bit confused. Oh, excellent. No, here we go. Yes, but that's everyone. Have I covered everyone? I think everybody got a word then, didn't they? Do they? No?
Yeah,
I think it's about time we have Dr. Yes. Philip W. Cerner's word on the Pirate Planet. Do you think that's fair enough? Yeah. We'll probably hear some of the audio bits I've already played again, but I don't care because it's so superb.
How long is this piece?
9 minutes.
Just say the entire remains of the world's themselves.
Yes, Doctor. Each of these small spheres is the crushed remains of a planet. Millions upon millions of tons of compressed rock held suspended here by forces beyond the limits of the imagination. Forces that I have generated and harnessed.
That's impossible. That amount of matter in so small a space would undergo instant gravitational collapse and form a black hole.
Precisely.
But Zanuck would be dragged into a gravitational whirlpool.
Why doesn't it? Because the whole system is so perfectly aligned by the most exquisite exercise in gravitational geometry that every system is balanced out within itself. Which is why we can stand next to billions of tons of supercompressed matter and not even be aware of it. With each new planet I acquire, the forces are realigned, but the system remains stable.
Pointless, but staggering.
I'm gratified that you appreciate it.
Appreciate it? Appreciate it? Would you commit mass destruction and murder on a scale that's almost inconceivable, and you ask me to appreciate it?
Funny that you should pick that bit.
Just because
you
happen to have made a brilliantly conceived toy out of the mummified remains of planets.
Terrible storms, Doctor! It is not a toy!
What's it for? What are you doing?
What could possibly be worth all this?
By the raging fury of the Sky Demon, you ask too many questions. You have seen, you have admired. Be satisfied and ask no more.
About composer Dudley Simpson.
Yay.
During his youth in Melbourne, Australia, Dudley Simpson studied violin and piano. After winning a piano competition at a local radio station, Simpson moved on to be the accompanist of one of the radio station's children's programs. After the Second World War and while studying at Melbourne University, he primarily made a living performing in restaurants and hotels. Prior to leaving his native Australia, he worked as a pianist and assistant conductor for the Barovansky Ballet Company, forerunner of the Australian Ballet. Upon relocating to the United Kingdom, Dudley Simpson became chief guest conductor at the Royal Opera House in 1960. Shortly later, he became involved with the BBC series Moonstrike, which was his first break into composing music for television. Dudley Simpson's involvement with Doctor Who began in 1964 with Serial J, Story 9, The Planet of Giants. Between 1964 and 1980, Simpson composed the music for 60 Doctor Who stories, 61 including his incomplete score for Douglas Adams' Series 17 script Shada. In addition to his work on Doctor Who, Simpson had also composed themes for series including The Tomorrow People, Moonbase 3, and Blake 7. Regarding Simpson's other compositions outside of his television work, Dudley Simpson composed two ballets, A Winter's Play for Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet and Ballet Class for the Royal Ballet School. He transcribed Liszt's B minor sonata for BBC Film and the Nurev Festival and Gould's Here We Come for the Canadian National Ballet. In 1974, A Voyage of Discovery, A Scenario in Words and Music, was commissioned by the Australian Musical Association and performed at Festival Hall in London with the Philharmonica of London Orchestra. In 1987, he conducted his own ballet compositions at the Royal Opera House with the Covent Garden Orchestra. Composer Dudley Simpson is currently living in retirement in his native Australia. Regarding Simpson's score to The Pirate Planet, suspense in Dudley Simpson's scores is created through various means, with dissonance, rhythmic patterns, as well as through his signature use of timbre, mixing acoustic elements with radiophonic elements, a staple of his score since the Pertwee era. The sound palette that Simpson uses in The Pirate Planet is not far removed from what he used in the Rebus operation, save for a muted use of the organ in this score. Filled with his typical use of timpani and other percussion instruments, including the vibraphone, glockenspiel, cymbals, and tambourine, his use of cello with bass clarinet is much more pronounced than in the previous score to the Rebus operation. While the script is filled with wit, the music is filled with many various moods, and especially playful, filled with dance rhythms in many places. The music accompanying the Mentiads is a mysterious mixture of organ, chamber ensemble, and the aforementioned radiophonic elements, while the action music is effectively bombastic indeed, as the Mentiads battle the captain's underlings. The music accompanying the battle between K-9 and the captain's robot parrot is quite suspenseful, demonstrating varied colors of the bombastic brass and percussion, signatures we know from Simpson's scores throughout the 1970s.
What's this place?
Never mind about that. I found another way out.
Enjoyable aspect of the action music in this story is the use of mixed meter, often changing between 4-4, 5-4, and 3-4 meter. This creates a sense of asymmetry in the rhythm, creating the basis of building dramatic tension through the use of rhythm in addition to dissonance. Yeah. The musical concept of dissonance is where a composer or musician will combine groupings of notes that clash with each other, also referred to as discord. Among some of the most dramatic music in the Pirate Planet is the music accompanying K-9's battle, which we mentioned before, as well as the death of the captain. The music accompanying K-9's triumph against the robot parrot is filled with gallop rhythms and brass fanfare, while the music for the Doctor's impending execution is menacing as the Doctor is forced to walk the plank. After the very colorful music and the Reboss operation, I was worried the music for the Pirate Planet would pale by comparison, and I was glad after years of viewing both that I was wrong in this regard. I was particularly surprised by how effective this score is, as Dudley Simpson does an excellent job making his modest instrumental forces sound much larger through clever compositional tricks.
Very satisfying. Come on, Romano. We've got a job to do.
More magnificence there from Dr. Phil. I do hope we get some more stuff from him. What do you think of that then, Reese?
It was brilliant, as always.
Yes.
I mean, I always sit here thinking that, oh, that sounds nice, and that, you know, that's eerie, and that's fitting for the scene, but he could tell me exactly why that is, because they're playing this note at the same time, which gives you that funny feeling, and he just, you know, so much, and I really appreciate that he spends the time sending us the feedback.
Absolutely. Talking of feedback.
Can I mention something?
Well, I nearly segued brilliantly there, but go on.
ruined his segue, did you?
Sorry. Mentioning about the music, though, I was just listening to one of the parts that he played, which I was going to mention about, and it sounded like the Federation march from Blake 7, which Dudley Simpson would have been doing around the same time. So I wonder if he's stealing bits from there.
Thank you. Well, I'll now reiterate my segue. I'll be singing at the end of this episode. And listeners, you only got yourselves to blame. But we have got
because
this.
Because of singing.
Well, it's not my fault. I said I wouldn't do it if I got feedback. I didn't get feedback. I'll be doing it.
Hello, 20 Megawatt Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Is the internet working in the USA with the government shutdown? Last week I mentioned Time Crash, but I was wrong. I meant Time Flight.
Ah.
I've recently watched Russell T. Davis' first TV work, Dark Season. This is a short-lived children's series, only two stories, about a schoolgirl detective. She always carried a canoe paddle in her backpack. Reminds me of someone who always carried a baseball bat.
Ah.
A guest star in the first story is Cyril Shapps.
Ah.
Playing his usual nervous foreigner.
Yeah.
The baddie in the other story was Jacqueline Pierce. It was about Nazis excavating a tomb to find a weapon. Here it is. The Pirate Planet by Douglas Adams. Adams.
Oh, God.
Polyphase Avatar reminds me of the newly released Scream of the Shulker, which is Splash animated. You think that Tom Baker looks like a curly wig on a sheep? Bardis.
Oh, God.
There were 42 extras used in this story.
Mm.
Probably just a coincidence.
Right?
This was made in 1978. So the theme of a woman ruling over a totalitarian state, obsessed with material wealth, is another coincidence. She was leader of the opposition in those days.
Only for one more year.
Mentions wear hoodies. The captain yells a lot and is killed on the bridge. Yelvis has left the building.
God.
In most stories, soldiers often pull out the pin of a hand grenade with their teeth before throwing it. The doctor satirizes this by biting a jelly baby before throwing a bag of sweets. The idea of precisely aligned planets as a power source was reused in The Stolen Earth. Davies. Doctor Who is not always filmed in a quarry. Sometimes they use a cave. I'm not sure you can live on a hollow planet. There was some babble about exploding the stolen planets inside Zanag, which I could not make sense of, but it did not seem like a good idea. Having an entire planet as a segment of the Key to Time seems to show they were not taking the idea all that seriously. It was very convenient that the captain had shrunk it. Bardis. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. Now, as interesting, I reckon he's gone a bit... Hang on. I think he's gone a bit mad on the puns, and that's all your fault, Kirby.
Yes.
Faster.
Yes. Yeah, go on then.
He actually counted the extras?
I don't know. But it's just interesting. He mentioned about the planet and the fact that... what didn't occur to me until he mentioned it was the fact that, you know, it was like part of the Key to Time. But before...
Yeah, the whole planet.
Yeah, but before that had been sort of taken over by the Zanak, or whatever it's called, that was an inhabited planet, wasn't it? So...
No.
Not
Califrance. Yeah. No, Califrance was not inhabited.
Was it not? Okay. Right. That's all right then. That wouldn't really bad
other
though, wouldn't it?
Other planets that they had... done this to had been inhabited, but not Califrax.
Okay, thank you for
yeah. Which then
that
he also brings up something that I thought when I watched it is if the captain hadn't shrunk it down, how are they going to get that whole planet to be another part of the key?
Well, they'd have to just to touch it, wouldn't they? And it would just shrink down to the. Because what about that great big thing on the Power of Kroll? Oh, spoilers! You haven't seen that one yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
There you go. Okay.
They still would have. They still had to do something to turn it to the key anyway.
Yeah,
all that gabble barb at the end.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it was.
Yes, I say no feedback or not enough feedback. We'll say, but
what is enough for you?
The requested song "There's No Other Way" by Blur will be performed by myself at the end of this episode.
Oh God.
Just think on. I stick to my threats. There's no feedback next week. I don't know what I'm going to sing.
Can
I find
jump
something.
In for a second?
Well, don't. The health and safety issues involving
don't
junk.
Don't hurt your legs. Yeah. Yes. Don't hurt your legs.
Well, it was just he brought up Stoner's Journey's End.
Did he? Yeah, go on.
He mentioned Stolen Earth Journey's End. Oh. One of the planets that one of the planets in that is Calufrax Minor.
Oh.
Ah, interesting. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
So quite possibly, so definitely deliberate.
Yeah.
Mm. I would say definitely deliberate.
Yeah. Okay, right. Like so I think we better go for some news. Not really.
Oh, there's no news.
If you want to consider Dr. Phil's contribution and Ian's contribution as no feedback, what does that mean?
Mary...
are they meaningless?
No.
Are we devaluing their wonderful contributions?
You're putting words into my mouth.
Is he devaluing
Not enough feedback. That's what I was saying. Bear in mind that, that Dr. Phil sent his feedback in a while back ago, and that was probably about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and Ian does it every week, and he's fantastic, and keep it up, Ian. Our feedback levels went down. Hang on, our feedback levels went down from last week to less than they were the week before.
You have a tendency to invite feedback people onto the show, so
not anymore. I don't.
It should be mentioned. Yeah, all 5 of your co-hosts were sending in feedback at one point or another.
No, you don't get out of it. I'm sorry.
Yes,
it's a self-canceling situation.
If I get more feedback than just the two, then I don't sing. Okay, there you go,
Master.
Yes.
What happens if one of us sends it feedback?
No. Yes, Kirby.
Oh, pseudonym.
Dealing with the news, perhaps you might want to wait until after the press conference for a certain bit of news.
When is this press conference?
I believe it's tomorrow, isn't it?
It's going to be tomorrow from the way everything's being
reported. Okay, well, the news is what is it?
So I'm in the future, I'll know.
What is this? Will you be quiet? What's it in relation to? Hello? What's going on?
Yeah.
Hello?
The mega rumor.
Hello.
What about the
rumor that won't go away?
Oh, the ones that all treasuring about.
Seems to have
missing episodes.
Yeah, wouldn't it be funny though? They don't a big press conference. There's been lots of rumors about missing episodes being found, and it's all
nothing.
A lie. So go away.
Yeah, I don't think they would call a press. Apparently, they'd call a press conference at a major London hotel. That's a heck of a decision to make just to say we don't have anything.
Mm, and obviously... Radio Times is reporting on it, Adam, and they wouldn't report it if something's not up.
Yeah.
And the invitations have apparently have a picture of an old-style television set.
Can I just say, this covers news. This is news because if it hasn't happened, I can just take all this lot out. So should we just talk as if they have discovered old episodes?
Yeah, right. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, wasn't it amazing? Wasn't it? Well,
excellent news.
Yeah, well, the best news ever. But I did say a couple of weeks ago, saying that Tenth Planet is one of these missing stories, that they suddenly rushed the release of Tenth Planet. And did I not say, well, maybe they've done that because they want to re-release it in its complete form? They spent all this money out on the animation, and they've actually got the full story now. But well, that's basically it. The only news that we're waiting on and we hope for is these stories are back. Can't wait.
Did anyone get the impression that they were forced by this latest rumor to speed up the press conference, that they're having it sooner than they were expecting to?
Well, I think the thing seems to be that up until now it had been reported on Doctor Who websites, and let's be honest, it was on geek and nerd websites. It was on cult genre, whatever you want to call it. I don't quite know what word to use. The fact that it then got printed by a major national UK newspaper has given some credence to it, and then the Radio Times even picked it up. And the Radio Times has, to date, I think, completely ignored this whole issue.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Mm. I'll tell you what. I know, obviously, the BBC, fortunately, I suppose, in some ways, are going to make a lot of money out of this if we have got a new load of DVDs that are going to come out in relation to stories none of us have really seen. And it's so exciting, but obviously nothing's true until it's happened. But if it has happened, whoa. And I just can't wait to hear the list. And then after that, can't wait to see the episodes. But I think it'll be a while before we get to see them.
I actually prefer Adam. Chopin before list. Chopin list. Dr. Phil would like
it
that
It was bad, Kirby. No, I don't think he would. It was bad.
Okay. Mary, who sponsors us?
Who1.co.uk.
Oh, she's getting it right.
Oh.
I'm getting better.
Better and better, yeah.
Well, anyway, latest products at who1.co.uk. The Dr. Head mug for the Sixth Doctor. People find
those look so weird.
Talking of mugs... I've just got coming very shortly my 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast mug, and the phone rings. Oh, what is the matter with people? Why do they have to keep phoning me all the flimmin' time?
He probably doesn't notice other times. It's only when he's on this show that it becomes an annoyance.
Yeah.
Now the thing that I'm reading about previously lost episodes from different stories are going to be available on iTunes.
I know.
Yeah, I saw that.
From Wednesday.
I haven't...
That's curious.
I saw that late, and I'm not sure I believe that one yet.
Right. That reminds me, actually, Mary, because I seem to remember you saying, when I couldn't hear you because I was actually on the phone last week going on about funny ringtones, that's our landline. That's why it's got a stupid ringtone. I've got no control over it. It's the landline phone. Anyway, I was talking about who1.co.uk, and then I was talking about 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast mugs. Yes, I'm getting my 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast mug coming through soon. How exciting. And my 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast t-shirt. So official t-shirts, official mugs, all coming through soon.
Oh,
are you kidding, really? When are they coming?
Well, next couple of weeks.
What
is it?
That's
next
what
week?
She said.
Next week.
Well, how do we get our hands on them?
We have to buy them. But if anybody wants, to buy either a mug or a t-shirt, bear in mind that the price of them would be quite expensive in some ways because I've got to buy them and then I've got to send them off. So you're looking at about £15 for a mug, and you're probably looking at about the same price for the t-shirt, depending on how far they've got to be sent. But they are available, and I'll be posting a picture of said mug, said t-shirt, on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group. And of course, I said I'm singing at the end of the episode in regards to not getting any feedback in. If you want to send feedback in to stop me singing on the next episode, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Now, back to who1.co.uk. Yes.
The t-shirts. Both Matthew and I would probably like those t-shirts to go to Chicago TARDIS.
Yes.
And Matthew and I would probably like those t-shirts to go to Concus Cerberus.
Yeah, but Concus Cerberus isn't until next June, and our Chicago TARDIS is the end of November.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, is that coming up soon, really?
Yeah. The sooner we can get them, the better.
Yeah, okay, all right, hang on. But what I'm saying is it's difficult for me to work out a way of getting the t-shirts in and getting them to you without me losing a great big packet of money, because I don't know how much it costs to send t-shirts to wherever you are, but I'm sure we can arrange something. It's easy enough for you to get the money to me, because you can go on the donate thing on the website and just put a message on in regards to t-shirts or whatever, and that goes to anybody who wants a t-shirt. Bearing in mind that I spent, if I've got to ship them to America, it's probably going to end up being about £20, I would have thought, off the rough estimate.
About Australia? How much?
I'll probably
be
around the same, wouldn't it? I don't think it's that much difference.
Yeah.
Matthew will get them all.
Of news.
What bits of news?
Well, first off, in a Douglas Adams related piece, Gareth Roberts announced earlier in the week that he's doing a novelization of City of Death.
Oh.
Yes, excellent.
Yeah, because and remember, also, all of the Douglas Adams did not want to do Target novelizations because he wouldn't get enough money.
Okay.
So all of his stories were kind of delayed for novelizations.
It's quite funny that my piece on who1.co.uk died to death a bit there, so I might not be able to include it. It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
Wow.
Okay, the first question goes to Matthew.
Okay.
What were the words... Oh, God, great start. What were the first words of the story? And I have to apologise, listen, if you can hear funny background noises. My next door neighbour is currently cleaning stuff down off my side passageway. So if you can hear it, you probably can't. But anyway, I'll do the question again. Matthew, and I know Kirby's ready to come in with the answer. What were the first words of the story? Spoken words, sorry, of the story.
Mr. Fibberly.
It is correct. A lovely way that gave you time to look up the script. Robert. I'm only joking. I'm joking.
That's obvious what it was.
It was a joke. Right. Uh-huh. Robert, what minerals have been mined, processed, and stored? Now, you get a point for each one. That's just quite a lot of points available here.
God.
No.
I know a couple.
I didn't know God was a mineral.
No, hang on. Let Robert speak, please.
Wasn't there something about Bendrogenous five?
No. Go on then. Kirby said he knew a couple of them.
I can't remember. Something started with M.
No, you've lost your chance. Thank you.
Mentalized.
Be quiet.
The one I remember. I remember aluminum or aluminium, except they say alumina, which is strange. And vullium.
I'll give you a point for vullium.
How about is it galbinium or gallium?
Galdrium, I think you were trying to say.
Galdrium, okay. Yeah. And then Matt, oh golly.
Don't worry, I don't think you're going to get it. The answer, according to the script, were vullium, galdrium, and acetonite 455.
Yeah, but later on they added the mandrake.
Never mind that, I'm not interested in later on. Right, the next question goes to Reese.
Yes.
Wealth beyond the dreams of who will be yours, according to the captain?
I know.
Well, Matthew knows. Give it to him.
Go on then, Matthew.
Avarice.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
A job well done to the degree of what, according to K9, in regards to the Reboss operation?
Not 0.166666666.
Jesus.
Mary. That was correct, by the way. Mary?
Okay. Yes.
What subject did Romana prefer to veteran and vintage vehicles as an optional extra at the Academy?
Oh, thank you for an easy one.
That's
the life cycles of the Gallifrey and Flutterby.
Oh, that'll do. Flutterwing was the answer, but that's near enough. Okay. Next question goes to Matthew. How does the Doctor describe Califrax?
Dull.
No, it's his actual words he uses for it. When it's first mentioned, he describes it. But I think you got
dull.
It wrong. No.
Dull,
no.
Boring, and tedious.
I know.
Go on then, Kirby.
I know.
It's cold, wet, and icy.
No. The answer is a mean little planet.
Honestly. But
Robert.
They keep saying all that wet and icy stuff.
Never mind.
Sorry? I'm curious, the whole thing about the dull, boring, and tedious.
Never mind. Robert.
Get on with it.
Shut up. Robert. The question is, how does the Doctor describe Cali? I've done that one. That was your fault. All right. How long had the Doctor been operating the TARDIS to date?
That's the 500-something years, whatever, isn't it?
I know.
I don't know.
Go on then, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
523 years.
That is correct.
I wrote it down too because I knew that would be a question.
Yeah, me too.
Reese.
Yes.
What does the multi-loop stabilizer do?
It ensures for a smooth materialization.
Correct. And what was Robert trying to say that nearly lost him a point?
I've got no idea.
Ask the question again.
All right, go on then, Robert. Here we go.
What does a multi-loop stabilizer do? It stabilizes multi-loops.
Get out.
It's hilarious.
But a bum.
Out.
Right.
That should have been the answer.
Right. Kirby. Kirby. What is the name of Prelix's sister?
Oh, I know.
I don't remember. J. It starts with a J.
No, go on in, Mary.
I thought it was an odd name for a girl. It's Moolah.
Moolah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. According to Magic, it's whoa. And it looks like bad news, so I'm not going to even open them. Because it looks like letters from the bank.
No DVDs to make us all jealous that you
no,
didn't
have, I don't have money to buy stuff like that.
Guess what DVD I got? Guess what DVD I got?
Scream of the Shao Kahn.
Terror of the Zygons.
Okay, right.
I've got that already.
Never mind
Scream
that.
Terror
Mary.
Of the Zygons.
Mary.
Terror of the Zygons.
Yes.
What does the Doctor say when What does the Doctor say when Romana says the tracer signal is coming from everywhere?
Ooh, I don't know.
Anybody?
Bugger.
No. He says, never trust gimmicky gadgets.
That's right. Oh, okay. I was going to use that as my opening.
Right, and the scores after
Why
those...
Why didn't you answer?
The scores after those rounds... Be quiet! Never mind, it doesn't matter. Robert in last place with nothing. In fourth place, Reese with 2. In joint second place, Matthew and Kirby with 3. In the lead, Mary with 5.
Mary! I think Matthew's holding back.
Yeah, I think he is.
He's holding back.
Matthew.
Yes?
What is one of the precious stones in the galaxy? The most precious stones in the galaxy. What is one of the most precious stones in the galaxy?
I know.
I already said it.
I know what it starts with.
Mary knows, so she's waiting for with a chance to answer this question and steal a point.
Again?
Give it to Mary.
Go on,
Mary. I can't remember.
Matthew, I can't believe
you. Go on, Mary.
It's Ulian.
It's correct. Robert.
Oh! Yes, sir.
What sector
just hit him.
Do the Mentiads head towards?
Why am I getting all these hard questions? Sector 4?
Ooh, no. Anybody?
Sector
5. No, the answer was Sector 6. But bad luck. Reese.
7, 8, 9, 10. Yes.
Why does the captain exclaim, what is the planet's bane? What the planet's bane is that when he sees K9? No, that's the answer, you God's sake.
Oi.
See, that's Robert putting me off. Right, let's try that again. With a different question.
Okay.
When did Romana get a present of an air car once?
Oh, on her 64th birthday?
Nope. Anybody?
No.
72nd?
No, the answer is 70th. Next question is Kirby's.
Master.
What sweets does the Doctor throw onto the captain's air car?
Well, they're supposedly jelly babies, but I already said they are licorice all sorts.
Correct. Aww. Mary.
Yes.
What bad news does Mr. Fibberley deliver tentatively to the captain?
He's always doing that.
I was going to say, which bit?
Specific bad news. I have some bad news, Captain.
Gosh. He delivered so much, I don't remember that.
Okay, anybody?
Specifically.
Is it that the field integrator has gone out?
That'll do.
The
Macromat field integrator had burnt out, but that's near enough. Matthew.
Yes.
How does the Doctor outline his occupation to Kimus?
No.
This is not a good day.
Okay. What is wrong with Matthew?
Anybody?
Yeah.
Who
are you? What have you done with Matthew?
Yeah.
Would anybody like to come up with the answer?
I don't know it.
Nobody? Well, at least I'll get one up on you lot. The answer is, I save planets mostly, but this time I think I have arrived far, far too late.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I remember that.
Robert.
Now.
What does...
Uh-oh.
What does the sort of thing that Kimus failed to run along, called. You know, he runs along and he sort of runs on the spot. What's that thing called?
I know what you mean.
I know.
I've forgotten the name of the bloody thing. What is it? Wait.
All right. Don't panic.
I said I know first.
I know, Kirby.
Inertia corridor?
No, it's going
is
in
it
Kirby.
Inertia corridor?
No, it isn't, Kirby.
It's the linear induction corridor.
That's correct.
Yeah, everyone knows that.
Reese.
Yeah.
Yes.
What side of the captain's nature does the Doctor's manner appeal to?
I know.
Basically, his short-tempered one, but you want the proper name, don't you?
Yeah.
So give it to Matthew.
Oh, Matthew.
Hit the homicidal nature.
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Kirby.
Master.
What machinery does the Doctor tell the captain is on the blink?
what besides the thing before? I don't know. Anybody?
Photon something.
No, it's a magnetoid accelerometer.
See, this is all the stuff that
I'm so proud of myself that I was able to pronounce that. Mary.
You're going for all the techno babble.
Mary.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Don't give me techno babble.
Mary. Mary.
Yes.
What does the doctor think must be wearing on the nerves for the guards?
Oh, that was my quote.
Yes.
Yeah.
Standing around all day looking tough.
Correct. And after that round of questioning.
Master?
Yeah,
Master?
The Bogom guard got asked there.
Yes,
I was about to say that, Master.
Okay. Can I carry on now? In last place, with no points, is Robert. In fourth place, with 2 points, is Reese. Did you hiccup? did you hiccup then, Robert? In third place, with 5 points,
I thought he jumped off the plank.
Matthew. Yeah. In second place, with 6 points, is Kirby. And in the lead, with 8 points, it's Mary. In
first time watching. Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Right, Matthew.
Yes.
Right. What does a captain exclaim when Fibili reports that the intruders are in the mine shaft?
Bugger.
What does the captain exclaim when Fibili reports that the intruders are in the mine shaft?
Bugger will do.
Moons of Madness.
Correct.
Moons of Madness.
Robert.
Moons of Madness.
What is the name of the pirate planet?
I know.
Oh, I know. Okay.
No. Wait, I'm just thinking.
No.
I don't think Zanuck.
Correct.
Yay!
All right.
Here's a point.
Points, he's on the board.
Reese.
Finally.
How does K-9 detect the Doctor's imminent arrival?
I know, he's got a very specific heartbeat.
Correct. Kirby. Yes.
Master.
How does the Doctor describe the Mentiads?
Goodies.
I know.
No.
You don't know? Go on then, Matthew.
I know. It's a psychic gestalt.
I'd rather use the word he used, if you'd like. I'll go on and I'll give you a point. But it's telepathic gestalt.
Telepathic.
That'll do. Right, Mary.
Yes?
What was the name of the captain's ship?
The bridge?
No, the ship.
Oh,
I don't remember.
Anybody?
I didn't write it down, nope. Sorry.
No idea.
Okay, it's a I can't even pronounce it. That's the one. Okay, after that round of questioning, in last place with 2 points is Robert. In fourth place with 4 points, it's Reese. In third place with 6 points, it's technically second, actually, is Kirby. And in the lead are Matthew and Mary with 8 points. The writing's on the wall, everyone. Oh.
Matthew's
coming back.
Yeah, Matthew.
Yes.
What does the Doctor shout out while regaining consciousness in the captain's brig?
I said no Janus thorns.
More or less.
Wow.
No more Janus thorns, but that'll do. Robert.
No more Janus thorns. Yes, sir.
What must be at an all-time low, according to the Doctor?
Whose question is this?
No, this is Robert's question.
It's mine.
Okay.
I know it's when they arrive on the planet, isn't it?
Not necessarily, no.
Our attention span?
What Ray said.
Right, anybody? For a point?
No.
The answer is his biorhythms. Right.
Oh, yeah, there's that too.
Oh.
Reese, what do Camus and K-9 go down in the service lift to do?
Sabotage the engine?
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
What does the captain call his parrot?
Polyphase Avatron. That's it.
Yes, it is it, yeah.
Not Polly put the kettle on.
Mary.
Yeah.
What is the simple theory of the plank as quoted by the captain?
I'll pass on that immediately.
Okay, go on then, anybody?
I don't know.
I know.
Go on then, Matthew.
You
got to be word for word. Go on.
Oh, crap.
I remember it.
Well, you have I'll let you have a go.
Walk along it.
Yeah.
At the end, you fall 1,000 feet dead.
No, I wasn't near enough. You're only a couple of words out there. Yeah, the words were, you walk along it. At the end, you fall off. Drop 1,000 feet. Dead. Okay, Matthew, this is your question.
Oh, yes.
Now, there's only four, I think there's only four questions left, actually, so, oh, no.
Oh, thank you.
And if you don't bring up the question that I wrote down the answer, that I wrote down the answer for.
Right. No,
I'm going to answer it anyway.
I'm not changing the rules, but where there's only four questions left, sorry about this, Matthew, isn't your question. It might be. It just depends who comes in with the answer first. Because there's only four left. That means Mary wouldn't have a question. So these have to be free.
I found one that I was certain you were going to ask, and you haven't asked it yet.
I do apologize. Right then, this is a free for all. And be fair, everyone. The first one to say, I know, we'll get to answer the question. Are we ready?
Can I say master?
Be quiet. What does the Doctor exclaim when Xantia talks of living forever?
Who wants to live forever?
Anybody?
No, not that.
Anybody? Right. Bafflegab was the answer.
Oh, Bafflegab.
Oh, Bafflegab.
You say it after I give you the bloody answer.
I just mentioned that word.
Right, next
I did too.
Question. Right.
Yeah.
Listen. Mm-hmm. What does the Doctor say to Romana when the guards chasing them smash against the wall after travelling on the Magnificat at the Celebrator? Oh, go on then, Reese. Reese said it first. Reese.
Newton's Revenge.
Correct. Right. Second to last question. What does the Doctor assign Romana to man during materialization?
Oh, God. That's that bloody Bafflegab.
No, it isn't, Robert. No. Anybody?
No, it is. It is.
The multi-loop stabilizer?
No, the answer is warp oscilloscope. And the final question.
Jeez, that too.
What do the Mentiads hit with a spanner?
I know.
Go on in, Kirby.
The engines.
No, the specific item, for goodness sake.
I don't know.
One of those machine things, but you want the bloody exact name, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do.
One of those machine things.
The answer was the megaphoton discharge link. Hit
well,
it.
Of course, Robert.
I told you, yes. How could I miss that?
Yes, Kirby.
Well, you never asked what is the mineral PJX18?
Right, that's a question. Go on then.
Yeah.
Go on, Mary.
That's quartz.
It's granite.
No, it's
point
quartz.
Point deducted.
Oh, quartz, I'm sorry. Oh,
for Robert for jumping in when it was Mary's answer. She got it wrong anyway.
I got it wrong anyway.
Do
I get a point for having the question that you missed? Putting in the quiz?
No, you don't. Anyway, the final scores are in last place with 1 point, Robert.
Woohoo!
In joint second place with 8 points, Reese, Kirby, and Mary. And the winner this week with 11 points, Matthew.
We knew it.
That's low
from behind.
That was close.
You're sweating it, weren't you, Matthew?
Well, I have to say, I had a 24-hour stomach bug yesterday when I was watching this, so that might explain.
So you saved that excuse up just in case.
Yeah. I just admitted that I didn't.
I had a stomach bug yesterday. I wasn't feeling very good. Thank you very much.
Matthew, lame excuses belong to Kirby. I just got up. Oh, I'd only got to see it once, so.
I just want to say happy birthday to Leeson Fisher, even though he doesn't listen to the show. Do love the Radio Rassilon podcast. I know I've not mentioned it before, but I do. Yes, go on then, Robert.
I've mentioned it before.
Robert.
I was going to say, did you know Bruce Purchase died a year after the documentary on the DVD?
I didn't know that, but I
do
now.
There's a documentary on the DVD? Thanks. There's no documentary on my DVD.
No, on the unreleased. Yeah, the release of 2007.
A Okay.
Well, yeah, the special edition has a wonderful documentary about the making of the story, and they've also got, yeah, I think it's Douglas Adams' stepbrother is also in the documentary as well. Yes.
Okay.
And there's also a second audio commentary with Tom Baker, Mary Tam, and script editor Anthony Reed as well.
Ah, that's too bad. Maybe I ought to look into buying those one of these days. They had Bruce Purchase and I think the director on Penny my Robert. Commentary. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which was kind of interesting, but I only listened to the first episode and a half.
Not okay. good enough, Kirby.
Thank you very much. yes. As I was saying, I used to have a new article called Welcoming People to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, but we've had two people leave, so I can't really do that this time. So I don't know what we've done to upset them, but they've gone nevertheless.
Was that one of the captains?
No, I don't know. No, I don't know. Right, so next week we've got Spearhead from Space.
Now, hopefully we're not required to do the Blu-ray one.
I don't have Blu-ray. Doesn't make any difference. It's just
required.
It's exactly the same.
It's just not in HD. Yeah. For goodness' sake, man.
Well, are the what about extras?
We're not talking about the extras. We're talking about the story. Yeah. I wouldn't worry about it.
Can I jump in?
No.
The DVD, the extras from the special edition DVD release. And in fact, most of the special features from the original DVD release apparently did not get carried over to the Blu-ray.
Oh, well.
Which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Okay. But anyway.
I'll be watching it on Netflix streaming anyway, so I don't get any extras.
I wonder if I can persuade any of my family to buy the Series 1 to 7 box set on Blu-ray. That'd be good.
Mary?
Yeah.
Just make sure Adam doesn't ask questions on the documentaries and that then.
I won't be.
Well, he doesn't usually.
He's asked who directed things.
That's not part of the documentary.
You don't
part
need
of the
a documentary
story.
To
that's
know that.
That's on the credits, though.
Fears four times every story. Obviously that's for next week, Spearhead from Space, then Horror of Fang Rock, then The Invasion, then The Three Doctors, then The Five Doctors, and the last in the current series of You Won't Get With This One, which will be on the 11th of November-ish.
Yeah, what do These you mean are, by that?
Because there won't be any You Won't Get This One on... 194, 195, 196, 197, 198, 199, 200. 201 will be the next episode of You Won't Get This One after the Five Doctors episode. That'll be the last one.
Mary,
a little break.
Speaking of the Five Doctors.
Yes.
Mary?
Yes.
When you get the Five Doctors, please report if... that Netflix now has updated their Five Doctors from the older version, because okay. if they have, I want to rent it for the extras, because mine is awful. Mine has no extras.
Well, increasingly, the later versions come in two discs, and Netflix only sends me one disc, and if I wanted to get the other one, I have to request it next.
I went on there. If I go into Five Doctors, if I get Netflix up right now, that's what she said, and I only see one disc.
Okay.
For Five Doctors. That's what makes me think that
it might be an older version.
Anyway, yes, Matthew.
Well, I'm looking on the list you put up on Netflix, the corrected one, and I've noticed that Day of the Doctor is listed twice for episodes 196 and episode 200.
Netflix.
It's not on Netflix. What are you talking about?
Oh, I know what he means. You guys are so picky.
Yes, we are.
Exactly, Mary. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a mistake because we can't. The Day of the Doctor. Yeah, well, obviously that's a mistake because the 27th would be the Christmas special. For goodness sake.
Oh, my. I missed that.
Oh,
so that's also the 200th episode.
Do you know the name of it, Adam?
No, of course. Well, I called it the Christmas special, but for some reason, when I
you
copied and pasted...
call it the Christmas
Be
special.
Quiet! I did call it the Christmas special. So unfortunately, when I copied and pasted it, it must have been the previous version I'd copied before I wrote in the words the Christmas special. It's just interesting. I don't know why it says it on there. That's really weird. I did certainly write it in.
Adam.
Master?
Episode 200 being the Christmas special. I thought that was quite...
Master?
What?
Master? Master?
Yes.
Master?
Stop.
Facebook has changed the post now. You could actually go in and correct your post rather than put another post up.
Oh, yes.
Can do that, yeah.
Can I? Where's
this then? Edit post. Oh, there we go.
Yeah, edit post.
Let's do that now then.
Okay.
Don't swear.
Pee.
So am I.
Edit post. I wish these people would stop being so pedantic.
I said I'm busting for a pee.
Yeah.
Who's that?
There we go. Done.
Thank you, Master.
Right. And the day was saved.
Yes. Bloody amount of editing I've got on this episode.
Oh, the Christmas special.
Unbelievable.
Oh, I've got to go.
Hey. Right, I'm off. Thanks for everybody. Oh, Patrick Bishop wrote on the.
I wonder what the spell was.
Very good, Robert.
I've had enough. That's it. See you next week for Spearhead in Space. Goodbye.
All right, goodbye.
By the thundering force.
I nearly forgot. I've got to sing, haven't I?
Yeah.
Well, you can do it after.
Let me clear my. There's no other way. Right, I'm ready. Here we go. Bye.
Taking the fun out of everything and making me run what I don't want to think. You're taking the fun out of everything. I don't want to think at all. There's no other way. There's no other way. All that you can do is watch your mind. There's no other way. There's no other way. You're taking the fun out of everything. You're making it clear what I don't want to think. You're taking me up. Well, I don't want to go up anymore. I'm just watching it all. There's no other way. There's no other way. All that you can do is watch that fly. There's no other way. All you can do is watch them fly. There's no other way. There's no other way. All you can do is watch them fly. There's no other way. There's no other way. All you can do is watch them fly. There's no other way. There's no other way. All you can do is watch them.
Co-presenters of the show think that we should catch up on viewing Doctor Who while eating our dinners instead of watching stuff like The X Factor and Big Brother and all the other things we enjoy watching together as a family. What do you say to that?
No.
Why not?
No.
What's wrong with watching Doctor Who at dinner time?
No.
Do you care to elaborate?
Do you really want me to elaborate with swearing?
No.
There you go then.
Thank you.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.